This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
Some folks born, still a spoon in
hand. Heck of a job, Brownie.
KPFT
Houston.
Heck of a job. Now bear to it.
When the tax man
bring him on.
Comes to the door.
Heck of a job, Brownie.
They say go tax the working class.
You're listening to 90.1 FM, KPFT Houston.
Listeners should be aware that the following program contains language and audio images which may be found disturbing and may not be suitable for your snotty-nosed little brat who probably cusses like a sailor behind your back anyway. Parental discretion is advised.
Another edition of Technology Bites here on KPFT. This is a brand new Technology Bites this week. It's 95% more fundraising free than the last several shows.
Yay, no fundraiser. Deadly storms, but no fundraiser.
I'll take the storms.
Right on. Welcome to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
And I'm Dwight.
And in the studio tonight, special guest, JK on the Run. Dwight, you know this guy.
Yeah, this is James Kendrick, who does the wonderful gadget blog, JK on the Run. He, a lot of people don't know, is that he lives in Houston. And this is his home.
He's so mobile.
He's incredible. It doesn't matter where he lives, actually.
What was that, Peter?
That's why he runs.
That's why he runs?
He runs
so fast that he always ends up back in Houston. That's so, right. Very pleased to have you here tonight, James. And everybody here's got one terminal in front of them, but no, JK on the Run, he has two terminals in front of him.
Because his are smaller. He needs
one's
more.
For Dwight. One's for Dwight to play with. Keeps him occupied.
Oh, boy. If you pull that mic actually back, it's a very good area mic, and you don't have to lean into it or anything.
All right.
There you go. So we're short a mic in the studio. Your donations have not yet managed to purchase.
So make sure to pay your pledge.
So we can get that other mic. You know, there's just a cord dangling on a mic stand there. It's kind of sad, but I'd be actually.
We're waiting for our $285,000 microphone.
The golden KPFT microphone. Well, we're really, really glad that there's no fundraiser this week, and we hope that we haven't lost all of our audience, you know, thinking that there's going to be just nothing but fundraising tonight, because there is nothing
I think the biggest benefit to our audience tonight is the fact that it's not the two-hour lost season finale.
I was thinking,
probably has boosted our listenership.
I was thinking that, too. I was thinking no lost finale, which...
Summer and everybody is now out of school, right?
Right. And coming off the long weekend, some people took, you know, extra time off. They take vacation around this time.
Yes, for those of you just waking up from this weekend, it's Wednesday evening.
That's right. And we're going to talk about this a couple of times throughout the evening. We'd like to remind you that we're having our geek gathering this Friday. And this Friday we're doing it at the petrol station. We normally do it over at the Tropioca Bubble Tea Cafe, but this week we're going to have the geek gathering at the petrol station, and at 9 o'clock on Friday night, out back of the petrol station, there's going to be a showing of the movie that Dwight swears he wants to get remarried while it's playing to. So it's Tron.
Yeah, Dwan.
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 That's his Tron identity. His secret Tron identity is Dwan.
Dwan, you're trite.
Any word on getting the Tron suit from Jay Maynard? Or is that falling through?
He won't return my call.
Yeah, see, I think Dwight's going to be leaving at, 8:59 and 30 seconds.
It's been a long time since I've seen Tron. You know, maybe it's matured like a fine
I think
line.
You've matured as a geek. Maybe you're ready for
it
now.
I may have matured as a geek. I just remember watching it and going, pretty colors, and that was about it.
Or Dwight, if you don't like it, sit in the front row with a bunch of glow-in-the-dark Frisbees, and when they start the part where they're throwing those discs at each other, stand up and start pegging people and yelling, hey, it's in 3D.
We're going to start a tradition. It's the Geek Rocky Horror Show.
There we go.
Participation. All right, so we hope if you would like to join us, anybody's welcome to come out. It's free of charge. We're doing this with St. Arnold's Brewery, so there is going to be alcohol. It is a coffee shop,
yay,
though I believe it's family friendly, all ages. It's not a bar, so if you're it's all ages as far as I understand. Is that correct?
It is correct, but they do serve beer.
Right, we were saying that.
And I wanted to reinforce they serve beer.
I think sometimes dogs show up too.
Yeah. But there's directions on the Geek Radio site. If you go to geekradio.com, there's a picture of the flyer for the Tron movie event, and we're encouraging you to come out. Weather permitting, it should be a great evening. They're going to show Tron up on the back wall of the petrol station.
It won't be like tonight.
And, I didn't understand.
Hail and...
Oh, yeah. If it's like tonight, it's double reason to come out, you know, because Tron projected through a hailstorm would make it 3D. He was bonked on the head by one of the energy discs.
Watch out for the pixels.
Yeah. All right. So anyway, we're glad you're here. Go to the website, geekradio.com. There's plenty of information there on how to contact us. If you want to use the contact form to email a question to us, we don't necessarily take those on the air, but sometimes we do, depending on how things go. The phone number, if you'd like to be on the air with us this evening, is 713-526-5738. That's 713-526-KPFT. We're also hanging out in IRC, which is remarkably quiet tonight. We got Bill in Germany. We got our German listener. And he says, as a Mac user since 1984, he'd like to hear Dwight and James' impressions of the Mac since adding the Mac to their computer stables. So we'll see if we can. I know Dwight would just love to talk about his Mac. Also, Dwight would like to talk about something else tonight. You have other exciting news tonight.
I do have other exciting news. As I was leaving the house, rushing out of the house, I noticed a small package by the front door, left apparently by elves. And it is a copy of Microsoft Windows Vista Peach Pit Learning Series. It's my book is out. It's actually out. Larry Maggett and I wrote this, and after months and months and months of working on it and then waiting for it to come back from the printer, it is now actually in physical form. Here, listen, kids.
It's a real pretty book. It's got the, you know, just nice plain text on the front with a little graphic behind it of some kind of ripple effect. It's tranquil. It's going to lure you into the Windows Vista Society. And
yeah, it's got
on the back, which is pretty awesome. It does mention Dwight's affiliations, and no longer, you know, something as to use against Dwight. It's a plus for him to mention that he is actually part of the Technology Bites radio show. So we get a mention on the back of the book, you know, that Technology Bites, and it mentions KPFT. And so that's pretty cool. So there, we're actually on, we're published, we're in a book, or on a book. We're not in the book, we're on the book. He didn't use Geek Radio as the website to show, you know, in any of his screenshots, I don't think. But anyway, that's pretty cool. Dwight's published author now, so we have Technology Bites can boast a published computer book author on the show.
Hopefully I won't be a one-hit wonder, but we'll see.
So, you know, you would have to write a book about an operating system that's just not doing so great, and that you've abandoned, kind of.
No, I haven't abandoned it.
I was saying, for Dwight to truly embrace his new cult of the Mac personality, he has to denounce himself as the author of this, this book of propaganda for the Microsoft Corporation.
Right.
So it's a love-hate relationship as Dwight runs Vista on his Macintosh. All right, so anyway, we're going to be with you until 10 o'clock. We hope you'll stick around. If you do have questions and you'd like to speak to us, 713-526-5738. But before we take your calls, we're going to cue up the theme music and have Peter broadcasting live from San Antonio.
From sunny and hail-free San Antonio.
I'm sure there's no hail in your bedroom. So anyway, here comes the info shot from Peter Hughes in San Antonio.
It's the Technology Bites Info Shot. Technology news and commentary by Peter Hughes. Injected directly into your skull.
All right, tonight, there's actually like lots of new stuff got announced today for some funny reason. I guess everybody after the Memorial Day weekend just had to, you know, spew out all their new product. But we'll start with the bummer news, and then we'll move on to all the new stuff and see where it goes from there. How about that? This one, in sort of science and technology news, bad news, as you guys sit there getting blasted by weather, even moderate additional greenhouse emissions are likely to push Earth past, quote, critical tipping points, unquote, with, quote, dangerous consequences for the planet. This is according to research conducted by, oh, it's some flakos, you know, in their basement. They're called NASA. I don't know who they are. And the Columbia University Earth Institute. So, I mean, it's just some kind of flakos, and I'm sure it's just, you know, came to them in a dream. It says, with just 10 more years of business as usual, emissions from the burning of coal, oil, and gas, says the paper, quote, it becomes impractical to avoid disastrous effects. So one of the things that's a problem is apparently when they've compared the projections against the reality, we're ahead of schedule. And that's not on the good thing. That's not like, you know, you've got the list of goals in your life and you're ahead of schedule. This is more the list of bad consequences is moving quickly. So, that's one to watch for. And, you know, you can, if you go online and search, you can see something about the report. But, it certainly means that there needs to be a lot more thinking about how things are handled on the technology front. Hopefully, see, the idea should be that we get better technology to improve things, but, you know, one never knows. In other news, this one, this pair of articles I had to put right next to each other because I found it amusing. Fortune magazine editor-at-large Brent Schlender says that the Apple TV is proof that Steve Jobs is mortal and is promising more than he can deliver. He claims that it is about as uninspired. He said that after using an Apple TV for the last few weeks, he thinks it is about as uninspired as another prominent dud, the Zune. So I guess he's an equal opportunity offender. Schlender says that Apple TV could have been a good transitional product that only made it easier for people to use their computer-based content in the living room, but also helped unclutter their home entertainment systems. However, it wasn't. As a result, and here's, I think, the punchline in the whole deal, it makes him question whether or not Jobs will have the formula right for the iPhone, which will be hitting the shops soon. So I think I'm not rushing out to buy an Apple TV, but I don't think that it's some kind of bomb. But then here's the bookend to it. Steve Jobs was out at the All Things Digital Conference in Carlsbad, California with like every other major name in technology, and he announced that Apple TV that they're upgrading. They're going to have an upgraded hard disk version of Apple TV for $100 more. It'll have 160-gig hard drive so that it will store up to 200 hours of video, 36,000 songs, 25,000 photos, or, you know, any combination. It's going to be on a build-to-order option from the Apple Store starting tomorrow. And then they're also, they partnered, he demonstrated an Apple TV running YouTube videos, so that it'll be available, the YouTube feature will be a free software update in mid-June. YouTube will initially offer thousands of its top videos through Apple TV, with the full catalog becoming available this fall. So, in other words, right after the Fortune guy, you know, opened his big yap, then Apple has enhanced it. The other thing that Steve Jobs said that was interesting at the All Things Digital conference is that he talked about the different markets that Apple was in, and the way he characterized Apple TV was that this was a hobby right now. In other words, they were doing this in this particular part of the market because when somebody gets it right, when they solve this, when they get it working where it works for people all the way, that it's going to be a big deal. And so it doesn't sound like Steve Jobs is betting the farm on it, even though Mr. Editor-at-Large from Fortune seems to be acting like this is, you know, this is the Apple-Microsoft-Bob thing. I guess I think I disagree, like I said, even though I'm not rushing out to buy an Apple TV. I'm seeing them evolving the product, which, of course, Apple's not allowed to. Microsoft is supposed to. And speaking of Microsoft, I flash back. This was announced today, and I flash back to this product from Microsoft. It's called Surface. It's a coffee table-shaped computer that responds to touch and to special barcodes attached to everyday objects. Basically, it's a Windows Vista PC tucked inside a shiny black table base. The way I heard it described is it looks like the old tabletop Miss Pac-Man's that everybody used to see at pizza places. And this shiny black table base topped with a 30-inch touchscreen in a clear acrylic frame. Five cameras that can sense nearby objects are mounted underneath the screen. Users can interact with the machine by touching or dragging their fingertips and objects such as paintbrushes across the screen or by setting real-world items tagged with special barcode labels on top of it. Unlike most touch screens, Surface can respond to more than one touch at a time. Multi-touch is the, like, big hot, if you want to talk about trendy stuff with LCDs and all that. Now this, given that it's been going for 5 years, I imagine that 5 years ago, Steve Ballmer and Bill Gates were having a conversation that probably went something like, they're sitting in a conference room and saying how Steve Jobs has taken over every area of the market that they could possibly expand into except for furniture, and that, Steve Jobs could probably get somebody to pay $5,000 or $10,000 for a table, and then they went out and built it for Microsoft. It's got the price tag on what I just described for you, the touchscreen thing, is between $5,000 and $10,000 per unit. So Microsoft is not immediately aiming for the finger painting set. They expect prices to drop enough to make consumer versions feasible in 3 to 5 years. The main place they're looking at them is like T-Mobile stores. When customers plop a phone down on the screen, Surface will read its barcode and display information about the handset. Customers can also select calling plans and ringtones by dragging icons toward the phone. Don't you hope that you're one of the T-Mobile staffers who gets to explain to grandma how to operate the table? So that should be fun. There's also Starwood hotel lobbies will be able guests at some of Starwood hotels will be able to cluster around the Surface to play music, then buy songs using a credit card or reward cards tagged with a barcode. In some hotel restaurants, customers will be able to order food and drinks, then split the bill by setting down a card or a room key and dragging their menu items onto the card. It's imaginative. I'll give them points for creativity, but I just have to kind of wonder. $10,000 for a table that'll help you split the bill is pretty out there. So I guess Microsoft is trying to get more imaginative and It should be interesting to watch. On the plus side, like any of these things, when somebody innovates like that, then others will copy, and we all get to sort of benefit from that. Of course, you could probably like get a Mac Mini and a 30-inch LCD monitor and a couple other things and get pretty close with a Mac and a table. Anyways, in other news, the world's largest MP3 store has launched. It's a company called PayPlay. It is a store selling, you know, PayPlay used to be very DRM-focused, you know, digital rights management. They're selling more than 1.3 million indie music tracks with a search engine that allows you to search for your favorite artists and get similar indie artists from their catalog. Previously, they sold only DRM-crippled WMA files for 77 cents, where the MP3s sell for 88 cents, so you kind of pay a little extra for the music that you can actually put on, you know, multiple devices and isn't controlled by the operating system. One of the strengths on it is its community. It's got a recommendation system that will, since it's unlikely you'll have heard most of the artists in the catalog, then the artists self-identify citing their musical influences, and then you can connect up. Also, let's see, the other thing with this that's pretty cool, from a not ripping off the artist's standpoint, PayPlay has a pretty good split with the artists. The artists take home an average of 59 cents per track out of the 88 cents. Compared to, you know, artists who are signed to labels average about 7% of the price of an iTunes store download. In other words, somewhere around 7 cents. Which means your purchase at PayPlay is gets you some good karma for the artists you're interested in. And, you know, so the Surface Table, that was new stuff. This PayPlay thing is new. And then the final new thing, this one could be very interesting. Most people have that I've seen commenting on it have slammed it, so you know in advance, I'm not in the slam category. I'm not thinking that it's the second coming, but there's been rumors for a while about Palm opening up a third category, you know, beyond smartphones and PDAs. And today, that got announced at the same deal as the Surface Table and as Apple's thing on about Apple TV. It's called the Folio, and it is the first in a class of devices that Palm is calling mobile companions. It's significantly larger than Palm's handhelds and smartphones. It has a clamshell design. It looks like a mini laptop. It's got a 1024 by 600 pixel 10-inch display and a full-size keyboard. It doesn't have a touch screen. It is controlled with a track point, you know, like the old IBM little nub that's in the keyboards. It has forward and back buttons and a scroll wheel. Weighs 2.5 pounds. And Palm says it will offer up to 5 hours of battery life even when using Wi-Fi. And the deal is it's made to work together and in conjunction with a Palm smartphone. It won't have cellular wireless access by itself, but it can be synchronized with the Trio and can piggyback on the Trio wireless internet connection via Bluetooth. And that's whether it's the Palm OS Trios or the Windows-based ones. The price for this, and it's it does not have a hard drive, just so you know. Like I said, it synchronizes automatically. Does not have a hard drive, although it does have like an SD slot and an internal compact flash card slot, so you could put in gigs of storage if you wanted. They're not saying what the processor is, but it does run on a version of Linux that, at least initially, doesn't sound like is going to be open to put anything on, you know, for just anybody, but there is going to be ways for people to develop for it. It'll have a web browser. It's made to be a better way to do email, it sounds like, and typing, as opposed to trying to do it on your smartphone. It's going to cost, the retail price is going to be around $600, but for the initial, you know, the early people on it, Palm is going to offer a $100 rebate. So this could be interesting. I mean, the two sides of the coin are, for say $500 in the introduction, that's not a bad way to enhance if you've already got a Palm smartphone and you maybe want to take notes in meetings or do emails through your when you're you know, on the road, to be able to handle emails and some light web browsing. It does do Flash and it does do PDF. It's got the Opera web browser, and it has a version of Documents to Go, which will let users create, view, and edit Microsoft Office documents. It also has a VGA out port, so you can do presentations. It doesn't have one of the sort of odd things is that it doesn't have a Garnet compatibility layer, which you may wonder what that is. It doesn't have any way to emulate the Palm OS to run current Palm OS applications. All the software is going to have to be written for it or ported from other Linux versions. But this one could be, it could be interesting. It's a way to expand what you get from a smartphone if you already have one, and it can be a substitute, a very lightweight substitute for a laptop if your situation fits. It may be that the niche that they're shooting for is too small, and that may be why so many people are complaining, or it may be that everybody wants a full-featured, full-featured laptop with all the other features I listed and more for the same $500 or $600, which doesn't really make sense. But anyways, that's the news.
All right. Thanks for that, Pete. And as you're talking gadgets, JK on the run is pulling out even more devices. He's staring at the greatest collection of mini terminals. He's like a Gulliver's Travels through the internet.
I thought he was happy to see me, but now he just rolls with a lot of digital devices. Oh, well.
What do you have here, James? What's your...
These are suitable for radio.
They're going to be on the webcam, too, if people want to hit the webcam page.
And you can do that by going to geekradio.com and clicking on the webcam. Link. So what do we got there,
Mr. Well, first of all, I should tell you thanks for having me on the show.
Well, it's our pleasure.
Fun. I like bringing my magic gadget bag with me, which is kind of like one of those little clown cars in the circus. Gadgets just keep coming out of it.
You want to get an idea of how, we should point out that if you're not familiar with JK on the Run, it's jkontherun.com, right? J-K-O-N-R-U-N. JKONTHERUN.com, JKOnTheRun.com, and he does a lot of blogging about just gadgets. I know that's a subject right after, it's a man after Peter's heart, in terms of just all the gadgets, because Peter's a kind of a gadget guy, too. Peter would be in hog heaven if he was sitting here in front of you. So what all have we got laid out here?
Well, I'll just start left to right and carry the circle that way. First thing I brought with me is the Nokia N800 Internet Tablet, which is just that's what it is. It's a little web surfing machine that's put out by Nokia. I believe, the only device that they've ever produced that it's not a phone. It has no cellular connectivity at all. It's just Wi-Fi. But of course, it's got Bluetooth, so I can pair it up with any phone that way too. But right now, I've got it going on Wi-Fi. Got the Technology Bytes website.
Wow.
Up on the browser here, and I usually use this with the iGo Stowaway Bluetooth keyboard, which folds out to a full-size keyboard.
Yeah, that's pretty nifty.
Wow. Just a little slick.
To give you an idea, it's about the size of a cigarette case when it's folded up, and then when you open it up, it is a full size keyboard. Is that Bluetooth then?
Yeah, this is Bluetooth.
So it's Bluetooth.
Yeah, it folds up. It fits in your shirt pocket. Just
are you coming
like
to the Geek Gathering Friday?
I don't know if I'm going to try.
You should bring this stuff out so the listeners who want to see it could go. We're going to quickly go through it here. What else do you have?
I've got my Fujitsu P1610 tablet PC with the 8.9-inch touchscreen. That's my everyday machine. I use this machine everywhere. It's a convertible tablet PC, little mini notebook, sub-notebook.
And he writes from this. He took this to CES and was doing all of his reports.
Oh, yeah. This is my travel machine right here, because it's so thin and light, and it's got a 5-hour battery in it. I can just keep going, keep going forever. And then right behind that, I've got the Asus R2H UMPC,
which also known as a griddle for cooking hamburgers and pancakes.
Yeah.
That thing gets hot.
Yeah, it got really hot. it actually turned on. Yeah, and that's a problem with Windows XP on touchscreen devices. It apparently turned on in the bag on my way over here to the show. And so I get here and open up my bag, and I thought I brought pizza, you know, pizza delivery. It's getting cool now. It's getting better now. And it's
so let that be a lesson to you. If you do get one of these nifty portable devices that, you know, while they may run cool, you know, just out there in front of you, in their storage compartments, if they're left on, they actually could not necessarily be a fire hazard, but I guess the heat could conceivably damage it if there's no outlet for the heat.
Oh, sure, it could.
So you need to make sure that when you are get this nice, nifty $2,500 device that you can carry with you anywhere you go, and all you got to do is forget to turn it off, stick it in the bag, and then it cooks itself.
You can cook food on it, and all the grease will conveniently run down and go into the...
When the technology becomes obsolete, homeless people will collect it and then just charge it up and then use it to warm themselves.
Yeah.
It'll become this poor man's heating device. Instead of 55-gallon drums with, you know, trash fire in it, they'll just have old technology to warm themselves by that, with really long battery life.
I think that happened after the dot-com bubble crashed.
Basically, go to the stop and go, charge it up for, you know, because you have the quick charge batteries and you get 5 hours of heat from it.
That's right.
You can't get online anymore. You can't really run any applications.
And especially since quite often we throw our mobile gadgets in like nice neoprene cases, you know, nice
can't
heat retainers, right. You know, that can't breathe. But that's the Asus R2H UMPC that we're making fun of. It's a first generation UMPC. It's got a 7-inch screen. This one's running Windows XP Pro.
Again, if you go to geekradio.com, that's showing up on the webcam. I know.
You also just go straight to webcam.geekradio.com if
you can't find the link. If you're okay, webcam.geekradio.com, and we're showing these up on the webcam if you want to get an idea of what this stuff looks like. It's pretty nifty. All right, and is that the last of the devices? There's one more.
Oh, the last one is the Nokia N95. In-series smartphone they call them the multimedia computers is what Nokia calls the in-series. And this is a nice little slider phone. It's got, it's really light, slides up, shows one way and shows your number keypad, slides the other way, shows you your media player controls, because it's a nice media player. But the coolest part of this phone is it has a 5-megapixel camera.
It looks like, from one side, actually just looks like a pocket digital camera.
And I should point out, it operates like one. I mean, that's exactly what it feels like.
Wow.
So it's really kind of a camera.
With phone
with,
and internet.
With a
cable.
Phone built into it and data. Yeah,
is it Wi-Fi?
3G. It's 3G, Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, and HSDPA 3G. So this thing is pretty powerful thing. That's why Nokia is really proud of these. I think these set you back about $750.
Whoa.
So you have to really want a good phone.
$50 off if you sign a contract with your...
These are unlocked.
No, these are unlocked.
You can use these on any, any service.
Yeah, these are unlocked. I was actually going to try to...
Try to take a picture of the camera,
taking
a picture
of
it.
The webcam.
713-526-5738. These gadgets hopefully will kind of maybe make an appearance at the Geek Gathering, but for sure, we got Tron. It'll be playing there, so if we don't get to look at JK's nifty gadgets, then...
Oh, that's a good picture, yeah.
Oh, yeah, he's about to take a picture of the webcam.
Look at that.
There you go.
And with Jay's little hat above it there.
My little hat.
Yeah. That is a beautiful picture, yeah.
Let me see.
So it's... Yeah, just to kind of get
Jay's head
of
floating above the webcam.
And so that's the Nokia N95. That's their latest in-series phone that I should thank Nokia for actually sending that and the N800 out to me to evaluate.
All right. Well, good. Well, if you have any questions for Mr. Run about handheld and portable devices, and you know, I know when I, you know,
or the origins of rap music.
Yeah, Mr. DMC couldn't make it.
All right, 713-526-5738 if you'd like to be on the air. And we do have a couple of calls in the queue, but we have plenty of open lines. We're not asking you to pledge funds to the station, so we hope you'll stick around and participate in tonight's program. Up first, by extreme length of hold,
got Terrell.
Terrell, you're on the air.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. I hope your cell phone battery's still alive.
Yeah, I'm hanging in there.
All right, what can we do for you tonight?
Well, I've got an older machine. It's a Gigabyte motherboard type machine. It's a custom built. I can't get the USB on it to work. You go into the control panel, you see all these yellow exclamation marks. USB controller is not installed. I've gone to the manufacturer's website, tried to find the BIOS updates or any kind of drivers, and nothing's working.
Were they installed previously, or is this something you're trying to put together for the first time?
Well, a new operating system was put on it. It was pretty much scrapped and then rebuilt. XP Pro is on it. Service Pack 2, but...
Well, XP doesn't have the drivers for everything, so your motherboard, I'm guessing that you have obviously the USB and a lot of the things are built into the motherboard, but they would still need drivers to run them. Chances are you could get the drivers from the motherboard manufacturer's website.
Yeah, I've tried going there. Gigabyte, I put in the model number of the motherboard. It didn't have a specific USB driver.
Did it have a chipset driver?
Yeah, it did.
Well, it may be in there. It may be included in there. Did you download and install that?
I tried installing it. It said that the chipset is not recognized.
How old is the motherboard?
Is it 95?
95?
Mm. It's an AMD K62.
Oh, 95. There's no USB support.
There's no USB support. There's no... it doesn't have built-in USB. Have you got a USB card or something plugged into it?
It's got the...
He's loaded XP on it.
Right.
But
right.
There may not be any drivers that will run an XP for the various devices.
Right. USB support didn't come into Windows until the second...
95B.
Second version of Windows 95. So if that was built in 1995, there's not going to be support for USB on that.
Well, I'm looking at the BIOS chipset. Version. The BIOS version is ALI... _0 DMI version 2, and it says August 24th, 1995.
Well, that's the version of the BIOS, which is pretty old. The motherboard could still be maybe a couple of years newer than that.
Right.
Still be running an older BIOS, but finding Windows XP compatible drivers for this motherboard might be a little, might be actually impossible.
And so I tried to sidestep it by going out and getting... An extra, a PCI USB card to install, but even that didn't work.
Yeah, the BIOS probably just does not support it.
The BIOS probably just doesn't know what to do with it.
Might be able to... I wasn't listening earlier, so if y'all have already said this, I apologize. But you might be able to flash the BIOS to a newer version for whatever that system is.
Oh, God, I tried.
I don't know what the point is on trying to salvage this old motherboard. For the amount of effort and time that you're putting into it, if you buy a USB card and struggle with this, why not just get a new motherboard?
It's actually for a friend. I've done tech work before. I know it's not worth it, but...
Yeah, the return on your investment for this, all this effort, just sounds like it's pretty small. But I wouldn't be surprised if the manufacturer... I mean, I don't know who the manufacturer is. Did you say it's an ASUS?
It's AMI.
AMI. There just may not be current driver support for that thing to run Windows XP. XP would not, I remember when Windows 98 came out that there were, it didn't run on a lot of the systems that would run Windows 95, the early systems. And even when Windows 95 came out, there were some BIOS updates needed to do that. So XP just may not be compatible with the hardware that you're running right there.
Right.
You might be able to go find, might be able to find a copy of Windows 98 and install it on there. But you just might be out of luck trying to get XP to run on it.
Now, Microsoft has pulled support for Windows 98, so even that would be a challenge.
Well, who cares whether or not Microsoft supports it or not? I mean, if the motherboard manufacturer has drivers that'll work in 98 and you install 98, it'll work. It'll run.
Okay.
But, Windows support for it means that they're not updating anything at Microsoft anymore, and you can't call them for help, which most of us never do anyway.
Right.
So, But I just don't know what to tell you on something that's that old, trying to get it updated, running XP. I'd say, you know, you could go buy an XP-capable computer, a used XP-capable computer, for probably around $100 or $200 or less, even, you know, like at a Goodwill or something, and just be done with it. But I just don't see, I don't know what to tell you on how to get it up and running.
All right, well, I appreciate your time.
All right, well, thanks for your calls, Ron.
Thank you.
All right. Yeah, unfortunately, just, you know, as we were talking about, the hardware becomes outdated and only suitable for hand warmers or, you know, electrocuting yourself as you get too curious. All right, 713-526-5738. Who's up next?
Next up, we've got John.
John, you're on the air.
Yes, I have a question.
Okay.
This concerns the Dell XPS, the new liquid-cooled processor.
Okay.
Are they having problems with those?
Are they having problems with those?
Yes.
In terms of what?
Anything. I'm just, the liquid-cooled processor is nothing new, but I'm just wondering, it's the first time a desktop I've ever seen. I've never seen it on a desktop before.
Well, the way it works on the Dell is it's actually a different kind of technology. I saw this at CES. It uses a combination of liquid cooling as well as ceramic plates that the water flows between as it goes down to make contact with the hot areas. So it actually allegedly is a little quieter and keeps a little cooler than the standard way it works. It also uses that same kind of technology to carry the heat away as a radiator. So it's a really interesting technology. I've not heard anything that there's a problem with it.
Okay.
I mean, I would imagine the problems that you have with that are the same problems you have with keeping any high-speed processor cool. The mechanisms that are in place designed to keep it cool, you know, the more complex they get, the more potential there is for that to fail, and then your processor burns up. You know, I mean, you've got, you know, when the Pentium started coming out and you had the giant heat sinks and the fans and stuff, if that fan died, then the chip got too hot, and then it just fried. And if these things require some kind of liquid cooling to keep them cool, and that liquid cooling system fails, but as to whether or not they're having an inordinate amount of failures, I've not heard anything.
You can probably... Dell has a series of forums on its support site, and they're keyed to each of its product families. So you go and troll those forums and see if you see, you know, an ongoing thread. That's probably the best thing to do.
There's also, if you go to directtodell.com, two being the numeral two, there's a 17 or 18 minute video that's pretty cool. It's the engineering take on the H2C's liquid cooling system.
Okay. Well, the liquid cooling system is nothing new. The government's been using it on their supercomputers for years. It's just the first time I've ever seen a desktop that ever used something on a smaller scale.
Well, there have been cooling systems available for desktop computers. Yeah. And gamers use them all the time.
Yeah, people have been using liquid cooling on desktop PCs for at least 5, 8
homebrew
more
probably
years.
10 years, and you've been able to get kits for good solid kits for the last 6 or 7 years.
If you go to geekradio.com and go into the gallery, there's a show us your setup gallery, and there's somebody in there with a Pepto cooled system. It's got all kinds of tubes flowing through it. It's a liquid cooled system that one of our listeners had set up.
So it's fairly new
for a mainstream
provider to actually be out of their factory coming out liquid cooled, but a lot of people have been doing it in their own homes, you know, for a number of years.
Did Dell buy Alienware?
Yes.
I wonder if that has something to do with the liquid cooling. I just couldn't remember. I've been out
trolling
way too long.
All right. So does that help you?
Yes.
All right. Well, thanks for your call tonight.
Bye.
All right, 713-526-5738. We've got two calls in the queue. We've got plenty of open lines. We are approaching the top of the hour, and we will have a Barrett time for you. You know, we do have the Show Us Your Setup gallery on geekradio.com in our gallery. If you do, if you have a picture of your computer desk that you'd like to submit for the gallery, you can email that to me. Just go to the contact form or email me, jay@geekradio.com, and we'll add you to the gallery. I was looking at our old friend David Fretz is in there, some of the earlier pictures, but there's some pretty cool stuff in there. Somebody's actually just uploaded a picture of themselves, it looks like. That's kind of cool.
That's his computer desk.
President 2008, Stephen, no, oh, it's spam. Okay. Cool. Spam in the gallery.
We never get spam.
All right, 713-526-5738. If you'd like to be on the air, we have open lines. Who's up next by Link to Hold?
We've got Anthony.
Anthony, you're on the air.
Hi, how you guys doing?
Good, how are you?
Well, I got a couple quick questions for you.
Okay.
Question I have is, ever since Windows came out with this new Vista, I use Windows XP. And I updated my thing to, you know, do Windows, and still using XP. But now my Outlook Express, all my emails go to it, but I cannot delete any of them.
You can't delete any of them?
Nothing. Not at all. I've been using my Yahoo mail service just because I can't stand to look at the Outlook anymore. There's like 2,000 messages, but it won't let me delete any of them. I've gone to some of the Windows forums to see if anybody else has this problem, and I cannot find any references to it at all.
Well, I know in Outlook Express, or even regular Outlook, if you have trouble deleting mail, sometimes if you hold the shift key down and delete, it'll let you delete.
Nothing will delete any of them.
Do you get any kind of message, or does it just you hit delete and it doesn't go away?
It doesn't go away.
And what about other folders? Is it just the inbox?
All of the folders.
Can you move the mail from one folder to another?
Nope. It's just it'll accept messages, but wherever they go, they stay there. It won't move them around or anything.
Wow, that's pretty.
Done everything aside, apart from trying to uninstall it and reinstall it, because I know that'll be a big hassle.
Well, why don't you, have you tried, just setting up a new user profile? Like, maybe just, creating a new user, even if it's the same exact ID and everything. Just set up a new user and see if that account lets you delete mail or not.
No, I haven't tried that.
I would say try that. That's unusual. I've not heard of it being totally unable to delete.
Yeah, I know, and I thought it was very strange. I said I can just go to the Microsoft, the forum, the web forums or the support and stuff, and see if anybody else has this problem. And nobody seems to know what I'm talking about.
If you just do a straight Google search on cannot delete email Outlook Express, you'll find some people talking about it. I've seen it. Like I said, I've seen it before, but usually the shift delete will let you do it, or if you just rebuild the profile, it'll probably clear that up. If you're interested in saving the mail that you already have, you can try installing another mail program like Thunderbird or something, and it should extract all the mail and import it into the new mail program.
That I haven't tried.
If you're not committed to using Outlook Express, there are other email programs out there, and most of them will import the mail and all of your contact and information settings from your existing mail program. So if you were to install Mozilla Thunderbird or Eudora or something like that, that might be something to look at. But if you're interested in keeping Outlook Express, what I would say is try creating a new identity. And like I said, use the same credentials, the same email account and stuff, just a different identity.
I've gotten used to using the Yahoo Mail actually right now. I really wasn't committed to it. I just loved the ease of the Outlook.
Yeah.
I've pretty much given up on it.
Well, like I said, if you want to go back to using it, start by creating a new identity and see if that does it clear it up for you.
Okay. The other question I had was for my virus and my antivirus and my anti spyware programs, I use the ones through Yahoo through SBC Global through my service, and everything seems to work fine until now. I did a virus scan because my computer's been running kind of slow, and I've got three listings that came up for a Java exploit. When I used the antivirus,
right.
I cannot get rid of them for the life of me. I've tried to delete those, and I've tried to quarantine them. I've tried to clean them. I even went back and did a system restore to...
Are they in the temporary internet files? A lot of times the virus scan will pick up virus files that are kind of transient, that are picked up in your general web browsing, like downloader trojans and things like that, when you are hitting web pages. But when it tries to get it and quarantine it, it's not there anymore because it's been cleaned up through the normal system use. So if you want to look at the folder where it's actually finding those files,
okay,
and see if that's not your temporary internet folder. Also, you can, if you run that, like if you just disconnect from the internet, shut down all your web browsers, clear out your temporary internet files, run a full virus scan and see if it picks it up. You can also try running the virus scan, and if it is finding something but not able to get rid of it,
okay,
you might try running the virus scan in safe mode.
In safe mode?
And you might also turn off system restore when you're doing it, too.
Okay, I think I'm going to do that, because I did, I actually clean out my temporaries every night, sometimes twice.
Yeah.
Just because I'm so paranoid about that stuff.
Right.
But I haven't done it in safe mode yet.
Try it in safe mode, run a full scan, and see if it picks anything up.
And it also might
give you the ability to get rid of it at that point if it does.
Awesome. And what is the name of your website? Because I know that you have a lot of really good information, and I keep...
Geekradio.com.
Geekradio.com. All right. Okay. Well, that's all I had for you. Thanks, guys.
All right. Thanks for your call, Anthony.
Thank you.
All right. Bye. All right. 713-526-5738. And we're getting... still got plenty of time before Barrett time, so more calls, please. 713-526-5738. What was that?
Oh, I got a 2 gig Kingston flash drive for free, so I decided to play with it. So I installed Ubuntu Linux on it, made it bootable. So now I can just go up to a system that can boot off USB, put it in, boot up the system, boot to this. It'll read off of this, write everything to this, and then when I'm done, I turn off the system, pull it out, boot it back up, and it boots into the normal system that was on the hard drive.
Nice. And you were just showing that to Barrett and Kim.
Yeah, we were mentioning it on... Actually,
oh,
I mentioned it
on IRC.
Yeah, I mentioned it. I was like, yeah, Buchanan, this is what I got. C? And I waited for him to look up. I was holding it up.
All right, sorry, I believe.
Oh, James Kendrick just pulled out something else in response. Dueling USB keys. So what's on here?
No, this is actually a 9-in-1 USB. This has got his system on. No. This is actually a Kingston Mobilite 9-in-1 card reader USB that's about the size of a USB key.
Right.
That's pretty nice.
And yeah, I use this a lot to get stuff back and forth from cameras. You know, it's just really cool. And when you first plug it in under either Windows XP or Vista on that side, it automatically installs 3 drives, so you can use all 3 cards at the same time.
Yeah, it opens up almost like it has...
Like a geek lotus flower.
It's right. A lotus flower, yeah, it is.
Right.
Yeah, it is. And the really cool thing about this, at least as far as I'm concerned, and Dwight will appreciate this too, is it's compatible with Macs as well.
All right.
You just use it all the time. And it's... The retail price on this thing is $8.99, so it's
really
dirt cheap.
Wow.
Yeah, and it's...
How much is storage on it?
Well, no, there's no storage.
It's just a card reader,
yeah. But all of the major formats.
That's pretty nice to have, though.
Pretty cool.
Yeah, how much
space does Ubuntu take up on that 2 gig?
I had to do it into 2 partitions. One was about 800 meg, and the other one was 1.2 gig.
So it pretty much filled.
So I think it fit in the 800. It actually looks to the system as if it's booting off of CD-ROM. That's the 800 meg. It looks like it's CD-ROM. Mm-hmm. And then I assume it uses a Casper, I think, for the other 1.2, so it reads and writes out of that for actually data. Like, I put it in, and one of the sites I went to was a flash-based site, and it didn't have a flash player. So I downloaded and installed the flash player, you know, just like you would normally do on a system, but it was onto the flash drive. So now I've got the flash player on. I've got some bookmarks saved on it.
Groovy.
So it's like a fake live CD then, basically.
Yeah, except you can write to it.
It's a CD, right, yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Cool.
My other... cool thing, which actually isn't that big of a deal, but this weekend I was helping a friend do some stuff, and we needed to do some stuff with some drives, and we bought a USB reader for our hard drives that actually could plug SATA 3.5 or 2.5 drives, like externally. You plug them into it, and then you plug it into USB. It's not an enclosure, it just plugs into the back of it, then you plug power into it. And so that's actually kind of cool to have if you have, you know, extra drives. Because I know some people like to swap drives. You know, they have to keep their cases open and pulling drives, swapping drives. And so that's actually kind of a cool device. And it was like $35 or something.
713-526-5738. Cool. Well, we're just all, as we're having more fun with all the gadgets that we have here. This is better than any geek gathering in terms of gadgets.
Except. And there's no bubble tea, though.
Or pizza.
Or pizza.
Or
yeah.
beer.
Or Tron.
Yeah, or Tron.
You heard it. You heard it.
Oh,
you saw it.
We told you last week that Dwight was a hater.
Yeah.
A Tron hater.
Yeah. At least I'm not saying, you know, that I think Blade Runner is boring, which I do. So.
713-5. Yeah, that's right. Blade Runner didn't make it to your list of top geek movies.
Yeah, no, nor did Tron. Wait, and of course, I took a lot of them.
They call me a heretic.
That's right.
Let me guess. One of them was The Net.
The Last Unicorn made it, I think.
Labyrinth and The Net.
Only for lack of pony movies.
My Little Pony.
Top 15 pony movies.
She-Ra, G.I. Joe, and He-Man. We're all contenders before.
Well, you know, because we got James Kendrick, if you have questions out there related to mobile devices or cell phones or anything.
Handheld devices of the technological kind.
Right. He's the guy to talk to. So if you got questions about that, tonight's the night.
If you're interested in what to buy, if you're looking at trying to decide between different mobile devices, Windows, smartphones, PDAs, Blackberries, whatever, if you have questions about that, this would be a good night to call in with those. All right. Who's up next by length of hold?
We've got David.
David, you're on the air.
Oh, hello.
Hello.
I have a problem on my computer there. Like, whenever I play my games, then they, like, shut down on me, and then the monitor turns off, and I can't turn the monitor back on. I've tried putting the CD in a different drive, reloading it, turning the monitor on and off, setting the resolution, and nothing will work.
Are these games that are using your 3D card, I'm guessing?
What kind of computer is it, by the way?
XP.
Sorry?
XP.
Well, like, in terms of the processor, do you know what kind of processor you have, how much memory you have, what kind of video card? Is it a particular model, like a Dell or HP?
Oh, it's a compact.
Okay, do you know which compact it is? How old is it?
HP.
Do you know how old it is?
No, I don't know exactly how old.
Well,
it's not my computer, I just use it.
Well, you know, a lot of the games today, a lot of the modern games require a lot of computer horsepower to run. So if you're trying to play a modern game on a computer that's too old or incapable of running it, you will run into the kind of problems that you're describing. You know,
yeah.
Generally speaking, if the system locks up and your display goes blank and you can't do anything until you reboot it, then chances are you might be playing a game that's too much for that computer to handle.
Oh.
So it would help if you knew a bit more about the computer you were trying to run it on. The games list on the packaging what the minimum system requirements are to actually be able to play the game. Were you able to play these games previously on this computer? Or is this the first time you've tried?
This is the first time I've tried.
Okay.
As far as I know, it meets the requirements.
Okay. I know that when I got my new computer and I was looking at some demos of some more of the current games because I was interested in trying to play them, I had some problems until I updated, like, DirectX and what's the other...
OpenGL.
OpenGL drivers for the computer. So there are some things like that you might need to update.
Oh,
right,
okay.
You're the gamer. If you were going to take a system relatively current, let's assume it's kind of current, it meets the requirements, but he's having these kind of problems running the games, displays freezing up, computer. You know, because when the computer goes to play the game, it kind of comes out of the Windows native mode and lets the game take over. And if at that point it seizes up, then it's usually video related.
Yeah, I would say it's probably, I would get the latest video drivers, start with that. It's also possible, have you done made any changes to this machine, like put a different video card in it or added anything to it?
Yes.
What did you do? What did you do?
My dad's looking it up for me.
Don't put a graphics card in it.
You put a newer graphics card in it?
Yes.
Do you know what kind it is by chance?
Powered by ATI Cabinetic Diamond 5020, 128 megs.
Okay. If and do you know how old the computer is that you put it into?
It's about 4 years old, maybe three.
Okay. Chances are, the power, from the sound of it, the power supply can't power that graphics card very well. The newer graphics cards require a lot of juice. In fact, a lot of them require a power connection you make directly from the power supply into the graphics card. And even if it comes with that connection for it, you may not have a powerful enough power supply. If it's locking up, things are going black, and the thing shuts down, I would look into possibly getting a new power supply.
Right, because my HP, I have a now I guess about a 2-year-old HP, and it has the, what do you call it, PCI Express. For any of the PCI Express cards, if I actually wanted to run it on that computer, I'd have to upgrade the power supply, because the power supply simply is not capable of driving that video card. So it's possible that the HP you're plugging this into just doesn't have the actual juice, not the processing juice, but right. The actual power juice to run it.
And well, how much would it cost to get a new power supply?
Under 50, probably.
Well, it depends, because you're talking about getting a 400-watt or greater power supply, and that could...
Between 50 or 60 bucks, I think, for a decent one.
With the right connectors, it can right about there.
But he probably isn't... If it's 4 years old, it's probably not PCI Express. It's probably AGP, which means it's got the standard.
Do you know if it's connector. PCI or AGP on your video card?
Let's see. Device type AGP.
Yeah. Okay, so they're not even worried about that.
Right.
It doesn't even sound like it can. It is necessarily power, but it could be power.
Well, if it's a newer card in a 4-year-old machine, plus the ones that came from Compaq and HP usually have really weak power supply.
Right.
And I would suggest, given the symptoms of it, first try. New video, latest video drivers.
Right, you can go to the ATI website and get the latest video drivers for the video card. And also, when you're running it, you know, when I play video games on older computers, I find that if you drop the resolution in Windows down to like 800x600.
Okay.
It's, you know, just something non-taxing, just to see. It's not a very convenient way to operate your computer, but it might give you a better idea. Sometimes when the game tries to take over the video card to run itself, if the resolution is set lower to start with, it seems to have a better time of it, because it's kind of running it on top of Windows at that point. So if you take the resolution, drop it down to 800x600, down maybe to 16-bit, and then try launching the game. But also make sure that everything else is turned off. Turn off any antivirus programs. Turn off any internet security programs. Anything like that might be using system resources. And if you're playing online, you won't be in any real danger, you know, being online or getting a virus, as long as you're not checking email or, you know, opening up questionable files. So you can go ahead and take that risk and turn off those programs just to see if the computer can free up those resources and it might allow it to run the game.
Okay.
How much memory does the computer have? Is there one other thing? How much actual RAM memory is on the computer? Do you know?
512 megabytes.
Okay, that might be beneficial. If it does, at the point that you start clocking everything down and turning stuff off, if it does decide to work, then you might consider taking the computer and upgrading it to like a gig of RAM.
Okay.
Yeah, if you're playing games. The one other thing on the power supply on the card, the box that it came in, should say what minimum power supply it's rated for, particularly if it's a newer card. If it says 350 or higher, most of the OEM power supplies from that era were around 250 to 300 at best. So if it says 350 or higher, you should probably replace the power supply.
Okay.
I hope that helps. It can be kind of frustrating trying to play some of these high-end games.
Yeah, no kidding.
What game are you trying to play?
Star Wars Battlefront 2, 2005 game.
A 2005 game?
2005.
Yeah.
You're probably getting close to being able to do it. But you're just going to have to keep messing with it.
Okay.
All right?
All right, thank you.
Good luck, David. Thanks for your call. All right. Disconnect. All right, somebody emailed in, Jeff Ragsdale emailed in, and he said that he was thanking us for turning him on to unemployed Skeletor.
Awesome. I'm glad somebody caught that last week.
Somebody, yeah, you mentioned that last week. So he said he's been laughing all week. Says how to defeat He-Man. Give him a PC. It's sincerely unemployed Skelemac. All right. So, wow. It's the top of the hour.
Yes, it is.
So much fun. You've been listening to Technology Bites. We're going to be with you for another hour. So when I say you've been, you will continue to if you stay tuned in. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Plicted.
I'm Barrett.
And I'm Dwight.
And JK, Mr. Run. And he's got all his gadgets kind of piled up now. There, it's like, you know those little Russian dolls where there's one inside the other?
Yeah.
It's like he's got his digitalia stacked up from largest to smallest, making kind of like a technology pyramid. All right, so cue the theme music.
Hey, Barrett. What's happening?
I don't know.
Well, room around town.
We interrupt this skit to bring you...
Baritone! Yeah. That means it's time for...
Baritone!
Yeah. Anyway... Take it away, Barrett.
All right. The Gregorian calendar is the most widely used calendar in the world. A modification of the Julian calendar was first proposed by the Calabrian doctor Aloysius Lilius and was decreed by Pope Gregory VIII, for whom it was named, on the 24th of February in 1582. The Gregorian calendar was devised both because the mean Julian calendar year was slightly too long, causing the vernal equinox to slowly drift backwards in the calendar year, and because the lunar calendar used to compute the date of Easter grew conspicuously in error as well. The creators of the Gregorian calendar set things in motion so that this Friday would not only be the first Friday of the month, but also the first day of the month. That's because they knew that we would be showing the classic movie Tron at the petrol station on the June 2007 Geek Gathering. Little noises over there making me all, ooh. Anyway, and they wanted to minimize the wait time as much as happily possible. The petrol station is the still living little brother of the old Geek Haunt Convocanes, situated in the quiet neighborhood of Garden Oaks at the corner of Wakefield and Golf. 985 Wakefield is the street address you want to plug into Google Maps. You can get a reminder as well as check out our cool flyer by serving to geekradio.com. Don't let the picture of Jay Maynard fool you, though. He had a previous engagement in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, even though he said he'd love to join us otherwise. Got a little Tron trivia to get you in the right mood. Okay, which actor produced too much of a bulge in the crotch area of his computer outfit, forcing him to wear a dance belt to conceal it? Actually, that's not quite the right move. That was quite the right move I was after. No. Jeff Bridges. Although I did sit next to him at Linicon, the first one, and yeah, there was a bit of an issue there.
Which
well-known actor had been signed to play the role of Dillinger Sark, but lost interest and dropped out once he visited the set and did not see any physical scenery or tank props as described in the film's script?
Charlton Heston.
I don't see any tanks.
Robert De Niro.
Peter O'Toole. I know.
What a tool.
Yeah,
he probably was seeing something.
It's a fact. Due to a mistake in production and emulsion ordering, there were flashing glitches randomly throughout parts of the film. They were hidden by simply introducing sound effects, so the glitches became part of the computer world's natural world. This technique was later borrowed by Bill Gates to turn bugs into features in the world of Windows. Okay, this one is actually next question. Flynn's program is named Clue. What is the name Clue a nod to? That's C-L-U. It's an old programming language. Clue was created at MIT by Barbara Liskov and her students between 1974 and 1975. It was notable for its use of constructors for abstract data types that introduced the code that operated on them, a key step in the direction of object-oriented programming. Another little programming question. What is Tron a basic command for? Basic being in all caps. Anyone?
Turn on.
Trace on. Yeah, the command is a debugging tool to trace a program line by line to ferret out bugs and glitches. Its opposite is trough, which turns the trace off, and it's been incorrectly assumed that Tron is short for electronic.
wrong.
Dwight may hate Tron, but he loves the Tron.
Oh, man.
Yeah. The anti-Tron movie. Tron.
That's all you can eat. CeCe's buffet.
Our next Tron fact. Tron was passed over for an Academy Award nomination for Best Visual Effects because the Academy felt Tron cheated by using a computer. Travesty is that 7 years later, The Abyss, that was 1989, won for its computer visual effects. It's too far ahead of the curve.
Who won that year instead?
I don't know. I didn't. I fell down on the Barrett Time job.
Was it lab? Was it Dark Crystal?
If anyone wants to Google it while I go on, that would be really cool.
Yeah, don't put him on the spot.
Don't put me on the spot. Okay, next is the question. What British rock group was supposed to contribute to the movie soundtrack but was unable to due to previous obligations?
Journey.
Queen.
Close, close.
God, really?
Yeah.
I was being able.
I think so. Supertramp.
Oh, man. Oh, yeah, because they actually had the old football game in one of their songs. The first one of those electronic handheld video games.
Okay, one more fact and one more question. The last fact is, although the film was an initial failure, the arcade video game based on it proved to be a tremendous hit and actually outgrossed the film in the first 5 years. Our last question, many Disney animators refused to work on this movie because they feared the computers would put them out of business. How many years after Tron's release did Disney close its hand-drawn animation studio in favor of CGI animation?
Five. They closed it last year, so...
Do the math.
24.
22 years.
Ding.
22 years.
That's retirement years.
That is. So again, the Geek Gathering Tron screening is this Friday at the Petrol Station, 985 Wakefield. That's it for your Tron trivia, and that's that for Barrett Time.
Excellent. So yeah, in case you didn't pick up on the fact that we are really pushing the Geek Gathering this Friday, come watch Tron with us. Outdoors, beer, Dwight. Big screen. It's going to be, it's as big as the side of Petrol Station can be. And at the beginning of Barrett Time, Barrett did mention that this is the half brother, half sister to the old Kava Canes. It's run by Ben, and it's a great spot. So we hope you'll join us this Friday for the Geek Gathering. But now, on to more calls. So here on Technology Bites, yay. Who's up?
By length of hold, we've got David.
David!
Hey!
Hey!
Hey, I was curious if anybody's had any experience. I keep reading about this new an ultra-mobile PC that syncs with the Treo.
What does what?
Oh, it syncs with your Treo, apparently. It syncs
with your Treo. Trio.
Yes.
Folio. I think you're talking about the Folio.
The Palm Folio.
Yeah, Folio.
So yeah. Tell us about it, JK.
Well, that was just announced today by the CEO of Palm, and it's basically, it appears to me to be a sub notebook that runs a really restricted set of Linux and doesn't do a lot else.
I was just trying to figure out the advantage other than having an underpowered laptop, but
because that's always a plus.
Well, I think they're pushing the price, obviously, because it's going to be, I think, about $600.
Well, that's cheap, I guess.
But they're actually pitching it as a smartphone companion. They've designed this so that it should be used with a Treo, obviously, since they're Palm. They want you to use it with one of their Treos. But it's basically a kind of a portable, larger screen, full keyboard companion to your smartphone for doing email. That's what it looks like on the surface to me. I'm not sure how well it's going to be received, because if you're going to carry a 10-inch screen device, carry a laptop. Yeah.
I was going to say, I've got the 12-inch, the Mac, little Macs, and the little tiny Sony Vaio, and it just didn't seem that much newer, I guess. But what have y'all heard about? I saw the press release on the Windows Surface.
Uh-huh.
Anybody seen any product demonstrations on that?
Windows Surface, you know what he's talking about?
Microsoft tabletop product that was announced today.
It's got a crazy looking cool product demo, but I hadn't heard anything about it.
I haven't heard of it either. Tell me about it.
Well, both the Folio and the Surface were in the news at the beginning of the show.
I was listening.
Yeah. We were looking at JK's stuff. Sorry.
So you can pick it back up on the podcast tomorrow.
Well, the Surface is a tabletop PC that initially is going to cost about $10,000. It's primarily for now aimed at the hospitality industry. People like Sheraton are interested in buying them, putting them in their lobbies. It won't necessarily be available, you know, for several years for consumers, but basically it allows you to manipulate images and virtual objects on a tabletop-like device that's running Windows Vista underneath. And some of the applications that they displayed today with it were like a finger painting program and being able to move and sort photographs, digital photographs, and that kind of thing.
And it reads barcodes. So one of the applications that you'll probably see soonest is at T-Mobile, people would be able to bring their phone and put it on this table, and when it read the barcode off the phone, it would be able to give you information about that phone. A sarcastic way to talk about Surface is, imagine if Microsoft set out to design a table, it would take them 5 years and the final product would cost $10,000.
And sure enough.
Yeah. Ta-da.
All right, guys, you have a good night. I appreciate it.
All right, thanks for your call, David.
Thanks again.
Yeah, the descriptions that you had during the news of them giving examples didn't seem really compelling to me.
About like, $10,000.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like a really cool product. It just seems like they haven't found actually like the good reason that it needs to exist at this point.
And the thing is, though, there will be much Microsoft wailing and gnashing of teeth when Steve Jobs puts out the iTable and everybody just goes nuts for it because it's white.
Because it's so cool.
I've got to get 10 of these.
Yeah. And it's obsolete. The leg falls off of it after 2 months. You have to put a coaster under it to get it to boot. All right. So, well, that's cool. Somebody called in and asked about stuff that was in the news an hour later. My short-term memory is just not holding up. All right, who's up next by length of hold?
We've got Bill.
Bill!
Yes.
Yes, you're on the air, Bill.
All right, thanks. Just had a question. My Firefox should be working fine. I can get on the Internet and surf, but when I try it with Internet Explorer, it just says no connection found.
Are you using any type of firewall or internet security software?
Let's see. No, I took all that off because it was bogging me down.
All right. So Firefox works okay. Internet Explorer can't seem to get to web pages. Sometimes that seems to be an artifact of certain firewalls or internet security that the program doesn't have permission to get out. It's also could be a sign of a browser hijack or some kind of spyware infection. Have you scanned your system for that?
Yeah, I did that several times with SpyBot, Adaware.
Did it come up with anything? Did it find anything?
Yeah, it came up with a bunch of stuff.
All right. So the fact that you ran those scans and you did find stuff could indicate that you have a level of infection that's not easily cleared up. You know, when you run those programs that I have listed at geekradio.com/spyware, we've talked about this time and again on the show. If the system is infected bad enough, it can be really hard to get cleaned up. So you may still be experiencing difficulties that are symptomatic of still having some type of problem or some kind of, you know, you could have some kind of browser hijack or some program in there that's designed to you know, reroute your web searches and your web requests through Internet Explorer. Oh. It can be a real nightmare to get cleaned up.
All right.
You might check out, I don't have this listed on the page, but you might check out AVG has an anti-spyware tool. If you go to free.grisoft.com, free.grisoft.com,
right.
They have an antivirus program there, which I find that is good to run.
Yeah, I use that one.
And they also have an anti-spyware program.
Oh, okay. Try that one.
That they actually bought another company or merged with another company that put a Weedo, which put out a really awesome anti-spyware tool. So you might try that and run that against it. other than that, it's hard to say without having a look at it, but I wish you a lot of luck on that. If you are having success with Firefox, good. If you do have a, if you do find that you're having a lot of recurring spyware issues, sometimes you just kind of have to take off and nuke it from space, you know, just start over and reload the system.
So there's no settings or anything that need to be adjusted, like under properties?
Inside of Internet Explorer, if you go to Tools and then Internet Options, and go over to there's a section for security. You can try setting those back down to default levels on the security and the privacy section. And then under which version of Internet Explorer do you have, by the way?
Let's see.
Internet Explorer 6 or is it Internet Explorer 7?
The 7.
It is 7?
Uh-huh.
You might try uninstalling that and going back to 6 just to see what happens.
Okay.
And you can go to add remove programs. If you go to add remove programs and check the box that shows that says show updates.
Right.
Internet Explorer 7 will show up as one of your updates.
Okay.
And you can uninstall it, and then when you reboot, you're back to Internet Explorer 6.
Oh, okay.
And just see if that, that might, you know, in the process of reverting to the previous version of Internet Explorer, might get rid of those problems. And at that point, if it's working okay, you could experiment with trying to reload Internet Explorer 7 if you're interested in having it.
Okay.
All right?
All right, thanks a lot.
All right, Bill, thanks for your call. All right, 713-526-5738. We've got about 40 minutes left in the show, and we've got a few open lines. We've got a few people on hold waiting to talk to us, but we do have some open lines. It's a free and easy, normal-paced show. We're not begging you for money. Got a special guest. We're talking about Tron.
Tron was nominated for two Academy Awards, sound and costume design. Costume design was won by Gandhi. and sound was won by E.T. the Extraterrestrial.
Curse you, Spielberg.
I still haven't gotten to the actual question I asked, but I just thought I'd pitch that in.
Well, chances are, if E.T. Was out that year, I bet that won the best effects.
No doubt.
Yeah, the finger with the flashlight in the end of it was from Tron.
Hey, but that wasn't rendered, you know, using any kind of CGI.
No cheaty kind of computer stuff going on there.
Although, you know, wasn't the big mothership, wasn't that partly done with...
You're thinking of Close Encounters?
I'm thinking of Close Encounters.
Yeah, Close Encounters.
Yeah.
All right. E.T. the Extraterrestrial was all done with real aliens. Real spaceships.
And, that's right. And they
although
were
Drew Barrymore was completely computerized in that.
Must she know? That explains everything. All right, who's up next by length of hold?
We've got Anita.
Anita!
Yes, good evening.
Good evening. You're on the air with us tonight.
Yeah, I'm calling from LaPorte. I got a question. I had ordered last year a Nokia E70 smartphone, and I had Singular service, and it was awful. I had all kind of problems with the phone. I kept it 30 days and wound up sending it back to Nokia because it got to the point where I couldn't even send an email or receive an email. So the only thing I could really do on it was to make phone calls and try pulling up the internet, which I could do. It took forever. And I've been leery of smartphones ever since, and I'm just wondering if they made any improvements over that E70 model. I'm kind of picking your brain as to what you really know about smartphones.
All right, JK, you've been called out.
Well, the E70, yeah, was one of Nokia's first kind of candy bar smartphones.
Right.
I have used every one of the N series from Nokia, which is the N70, the N73, the N90, the N95, which is the one that we were showing tonight. They're excellent smartphones. I think a lot of the problems you were probably experiencing before, while the E70 was one of the early ones and it didn't have a lot of memory on it, but it sounded it sounded like your carrier service pretty much sucked too.
Yeah, well, and that was my question: is if there is a problem with Singular, excuse me, as far as their internet goes.
No, I've got friends that are using it here locally fine.
Yeah, I use the Samsung Blackjack on it, and it's quite, you know, it's not as fast as I would say. You know, I've used Verizon's internet service on their phones, and that seems a little zippier, but it's certainly quite usable. They are using a 3G network on their newer phones.
Well, it sounds to me like the difference, but less than how fast it is or how zippy it is, it's like the difference between it working and not working is where she was experiencing her breakdown. The fact that it would actually not connect to the internet, not do what it's supposed to do, not send and receive email, was the problem that she encountered.
It was literally hours and hours every day over there in the singular corporate office. Over there on Fairmont Beltway 8. And
did you look on their map to see if LaPorte is supported? I mean, is that in their coverage area?
That is in their coverage area. And I explicitly live in Shore Acres, and it's awful reception out there. But I would be like where I'm at right now, where I get all bars and good reception and all that, and I couldn't get the phone to
operate. You have an opportunity to try that phone anywhere else, like in any other coverage areas or like in the city or anything?
Well, actually, right down at the corporate office there on Fairmont and Beltway 8, you know, in Pasadena.
Yeah.
And they sent emails off my phone to their phone, and they got a message that they got an email, but they never received the email.
Wow.
There was something wrong with the transmission, and then they would send an email using their phone to my E70, and I got nothing.
How long ago was this?
It was the end of last year. It was right in between Thanksgiving and Christmas.
Wow. I wonder if you just, you know, managed to get a bad device. They never offered to swap it out or try it with another phone or anything like that?
Well, no, and I sent it back, and I said, I'm just going to sit and wait and see what happens with these smartphones, because that's what I really want.
Does that thing run Windows Mobile?
No, Nokia runs the S60, which is a Symbian variant. And like I said, I've used virtually all of the Nokia N series, and they work really well. Mm-hmm. So I don't know what to
tell
you.
Now, what Singular did tell me before it slips my mind is that when you have an unlocked phone, that sometimes that unlocked phone is not sensitive to, you know, your provider. Because when Singular has phones made for Singular, apparently there's some sort of a chip or a device that they put in that phone that makes it very sensitive to Singular provider. And when you have an unlocked phone, whatever it is that they put in that phone to make it, you know, sensitive to Singular isn't there. So we went through every scenario. I mean, those technicians are really smart, and they were very, very patient, and I mean, it was like, I was like over 150 hours over about 3 weeks, just down there every day going, what in the world is wrong? And they would try everything. And
sounds like the only thing they didn't try was switching devices. And, you know, I mean, I'll tell you, my experience with mobile devices is pretty limited to Windows Mobile and BlackBerry. And I know that as recently as a year ago, BlackBerry was incredibly flaky, and Windows Mobile was not all that reliable. There have been some pretty dramatic improvements in the last year in mobile technology and the way that it works. I'm not going to tell you to go out and get one after that horrible experience that you had, but you know, I think sometimes it's the luck of the draw. Some of us are just cursed when it comes to technology, or every now and then you will encounter that albatross of an electronic device that just doesn't do what it's supposed to do.
Right.
And maybe the universe is saying, hey, you know, change brands, change carriers, do something else. If Singular has to be able to satisfy somebody, and so does Nokia, otherwise they wouldn't be, you know, doing as good a business as they are. And as JK was mentioning, that he's used the Nokia devices and had a lot of luck with them with several devices. So go ahead.
I was just going to throw in, and he had a good point. The Nokia phones are unlocked devices, and sometimes what you run into with the carriers, you know, they want you to buy
their device, right?
Right.
And they won't bend over, really, to try to make sure that your unlocked phone is configured for everything, data, email, all that stuff. So that there may have been some of that there, and you weren't getting help. So in those cases, I always go to howardforums.com, which is the single best source of cell phone information. It's a user community. I guarantee you, you can search and you'll find how to configure that with any network. So that's something to keep
but
in mind.
At this point now, that you don't have the phone anymore, right?
No, I kept it 30 days and I sent it back.
Okay, so do you currently have a contract with Singular?
I do. Well, I'm not under contract. I pay by the month. I've always been like that. I bought my old 6340i straight out, and I've never had a contract with Singular, so I have that flexibility.
Is it Verizon
that's
offering?
Problems.
Is it Verizon that's offering the trial, like the you can just take their service 30 days or whatever?
Test drive.
Yeah, test drive. You might just try another device, an updated device on a different carrier, and like try Verizon or something and see if you have any better luck with it.
Well, okay, the original phone that I own, cell phone, was a Nokia, and I don't have a problem with Nokia. I like the way the E70 was a bar phone, and then it slid out, and you had more accessible keyboard. And I like that the clarity of the screen was magnificent, I thought, for, being as small as it was. It was a little more oversized than a regular, phone. But the clarity was very sharp. But,
Well, what can we do for you at this point now? I mean, you've obviously had a phone that didn't work, that you didn't like. You've called us to ask us if they've gotten any better. I mean, they should have worked in the first place. It sounds to me like you had a uniquely negative experience. Would you like for us to tell you to try it again, or are you thinking about trying it again, or what are you looking for here?
I got in just a little bit late on your program, and I heard you talking about the new Nokia, and I didn't get the model number, and I don't know anything about it.
Go ahead, JK. Tell us about
that. That's the N95. That's their very latest one. It's a smartphone like a lot of the Nokia phones. The main thing that this has is a really good camera.
Is it a bar phone?
It is a bar phone with a slider where it's all screen, and you slide it up and you see the keypad, the number key.
Right.
It's a nice phone.
Pricey.
Yeah, it's going to set you back over $700.
Uh-huh.
So if you're not prepared, if you're prepared to drop $700 on their latest technology.
It's a nice
phone. Would be, if she wanted to go back to the Nokia, what's a good mid-range phone that they are offering right now for a bar phone or for...
Well, I like their smartphones. I like the E61. It's a really nice smartphone they have. It's a bar phone, but it's real thin, but it's a little wider. And it's got a nice QWERTY keypad, so you can actually do email and stuff really, really, really easily.
I need to give somebody else an opportunity. We are running out of time. We're about not really running. We have about half hour left, but we do got some other calls in the queue. Does that help you at all?
Well, yes. And I'll be listening for you next week.
Okay. Thanks very much for calling.
Okay, thanks a lot.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye now.
It just sounds like one of those, sometimes you do get a lemon, in technology. I mean, I've seen computers that are that way, and it's good that she got out of it after 30 days. But, it sounds, I know people that have Nokia phones that have had no problems. I would question whether or not it was the coverage area. I know that you get down there in the outskirts of town, out there in LaPorte and Baytown, and even out on the far side of Deer Park and so forth, that you may not have the latest, greatest cell phone tower coverage out there, but I don't know. Who's up next by length? Oh, let me get a number real quick. 713-526-5738 is the number to call if you'd like to be on the air with us tonight.
And E.T. actually won that category, but it was up against Poltergeist.
And Blade Runner.
And Blade Runner.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. 80.
And beat Blade Runner.
The chronology is 1980 Star Wars Episode 5, Empire Strikes Back, followed by Raiders of the Lost Ark, then E.T.,
then the other Star Wars, Return of the Jedi, then an Indiana Jones, then 85 Cocoon won it. But the little-known factoid, the cast of Cocoon was comprised entirely of teenage actors. And that explains the visual effects award. And then Aliens, Interspace. 1988 was Who Framed Roger Rabbit, which is kind of cool because Roger Rabbit contained traditional animation and live action, which paved the way for the 89 winner of The Abyss, which combined live action and CGI animation. So CGI killed, I guess, the hand-drawn drawing.
And in 1982, the best original song was From an Officer and a Gentleman, Up Where We Belong.
So thanks for planting that little musical Easter egg on us. All right, 713-526-5738 is the number to call. If you'd like to be on the air with us, we do have some open lines. We are about a half hour away from quitting time. If you're tuned in and you're... Was there something you're supposed to be live blogging tonight, Dwight?
No, I wasn't live blogging, but then someone else out there, maybe Steve Jobs and Bill Gates at about now should be on stage together at the D conference in Carlsbad, New Mexico, where they are having their first joint stage appearance in like years and years and years.
I heard it's going to be
pudding
wrestling.
Oh, and here's a quote.
Pudding wrestling. What's the quote?
Here's a quote. Bill Gates said, "Talk to the hand. I'm listening to my Zune." First time Steve Jobs addressed him.
Oh, man. Oh, really?
And Steve Jobs spilled his Coke on the table, the surface thing, and that's so it hasn't gone well, apparently.
The antics. All right, who's up next, my length of hole?
We've got Grady.
Grady!
Hey, how you doing?
Good, how are you?
Pretty well. I got a... couple questions. Real quick though, for the guy trying to play Star Wars Battlefront 2 on his PC, he can save himself a lot of money and time. Just get a $129 PS2 and a $20 greatest hits copy of Battlefront 2. They were meant to work together. I have it. It works great. And it may not look as good, but it won't shut down on you.
Yeah.
And for Anita, Singulair is a medication for congestion. and Singular is the phone service. I don't mean to sound rude, Anita, but I'm a bit of a pronunciation snob.
Grammar police!
Okay, my question is concerning iTunes and the Grace Note CD database. I just recently, about 3 weeks ago, pretty much scored a... 2004 17-inch PowerBook G4, and so I'm new to iTunes basically, and so what I've been doing is just pretty much dumping CDs on there that I have already, and most of the time the when I go into advanced on iTunes and I click on get CD track names, the right things will pop up because they're CDs that I've bought.
Right.
But I've had, one CD in particular that's like a promo single from one of my friend's bands.
Right.
As a local band.
Yeah.
I put that in there and just, you know, for the heck of it, I went on there and not only did it not, recognize it, but it mislabeled it completely. They're like a rock group. And when I put it in there, it recognized it as like this country band. And
well, if they're not in the database, which a lot of local bands aren't. I mean, my band actually got somebody took the time and added us into the database. So when you put one of our CDs in, we're a local band with no real distribution. You put one of our CDs in, it'll pick up all the tracks. It's also the way it's encoded on the disc, too, that iTunes can pick it up from there as well. But if there is absolutely no information on the disc, then iTunes may have made a best effort and just got it wrong.
Right. Okay.
You can manually go in there and set that information and correct it.
Right, and I do that. But the thing is, when I hit submit, the weird thing is with other CDs that it does recognize, I can hit submit, and a CD info window will pop up,
where I can put artist, composer, album, genre, and the year. I can actually put the year in. But on this one in particular, it won't, that window won't come up. It'll just automatically send it to Grace Note, without me being able to edit the year. And so, like, I'll edit all the other information. The CD came out in 2004, and it'll say that it came out in 96 or something like that.
Well, I guess it's just a sign that you should give up on local music. you should only buy what the corporate music industry is telling you to buy.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, you just really, you know, obey and comply. I don't know what to tell you.
I should throw this computer out and go buy a compact with Windows Vista.
Well, yeah.
Actually, you should buy a case and a piece of paper and a Sharpie. And then you can put the CD in the case and write whatever you want to on the Sharpie. Put the Sharpie on the paper.
Have you submitted any stuff to Grace Notes? Have you ever tried to modify your settings in iTunes?
No, but mainly
yes,
because
I have.
No, I'm asking Dwight.
No, mainly because, you know, my musical tastes pretty much run to things that everybody in this room probably snicker at. So, yeah, see? He like it just did.
He labels all of his ABBA songs as Metallica.
Exactly. Exactly. My tastes are pretty mainstream. So
you haven't had to really, like, play any pretty local stuff in there or try to make any modifications. Yeah, what about you, Barrett? You should probably.
Yeah, I mean, I do. I just hit the open Apple I button, and it lets you change everything. If it's not letting you change it, sometimes it's the file permissions and it might be read only, but I've never tried to submit anything to Grace Note.
Yeah, I've been surprised by the stuff that I've put in there that actually did pick up, that it knew. I've had very little stuff that I've put in there that it
actually
didn't know.
But you don't have to necessarily send it to Grace Note, just so you can have it the proper record in your iTunes,
yeah, right.
So that your iPod shows it properly.
Right. Modify it locally. And the cool thing is too, if you want to like change them all, if you highlight a whole group of them and hit that open Apple I or option I, it'll change all of them with one stroke. Actually, I guess that'd be four strokes for the year.
Oh, so if I highlight, you know, I don't even tell you the truth. This Mac thing is so new to me. I don't even know how to highlight all the tracks at once.
Just highlight the first one, hold the shift button, and then I believe click the bottom one, and it gets everything from the top to the bottom. Then you just hold the open Apple, hit I, and then you can put in the year. Click yes, it'll say apply to all. Click OK, and you're done.
Okay, somebody showed me that one time. Okay, so I've got these three tracks. And in this one CD that I put in, it's I work for a local mobile DJ company, and they'll burn stuff all the time, you know, that we can go take to parties and play.
Right.
And this one, it just has three songs on it, and I went to a school that had a lot of Spanish-speaking kids, and this band, Rebeldia, is on here. They're kind of like a reggaeton band, and when I said get CD track info, it said sorry we cannot recognize it, and it pulled up like 20 different groups to like choose from, and they weren't they weren't in the list.
Right.
It'll try and get close. It's fabulous show tunes. The best thing to do is if you've got like friends that are putting stuff out there, have them enable the CD text writing, and iTunes will look at the CD text if it can't find a CDDB entry.
Okay, so I just did the thing you just told me how to,
Right, and what happened?
There's a larger, multiple item information window.
Yeah.
Popped up, and I can put, all this stuff, including the year and beats per minute. That was my other question, because I'm into electronic music as well.
Right.
And,
So you can put a lot of information in there, and it doesn't have to necessarily be submitted to Grace Notes or anything like that. As long as you have it locally, then your iTunes database has it. Your iPod will know what it is if you use that. So that's really all that matters, ultimately.
Excellent.
All right.
I'm going to write that down. So it's
that's all that matters, ultimately.
it's called Command I.
Open
Apple I once you have everything highlighted, and it'll prompt you yes or no for the first time. If you click, like, don't ask me this again, it'll just automatically apply it to all your selections.
Okay.
All right?
All right. Thanks a lot.
All right. Thanks for your call.
Bye-bye.
You know, Dwight just recently opened his Apple Eye. That's why he converted. It's like a third eye opening. It's kind of an enlightenment.
I'm still snickering at his playlist. I'm snickering at imagining his playlist.
His playlist is on. It's rampant.
It's the soundtrack from Tron.
Super Trail. Don't you share it?
What?
Your playlist.
No, I don't have it on here. I have it on my home.
I don't have it on me.
You know, I
just got to close the machine real fast.
Everybody has at least one
Guilty Pleasure song?
Yeah, Guilty Pleasure song. Mine is Air Supply's Lost in Love.
You need to come see the Light Rock Express.
The Light Rock Express?
They play that song live, and they're all...
Do they hit those high notes? They hit the high notes? Oh, man.
They do some Bee Gees and all the good Light Rock stuff, all the Guilty Pleasure music. The stuff that you swear you hated when it was coming out.
But you know all the words.
But you know all the words. Yeah, my distinct recollection of all that music was changing the channel or turning it off, and yet somehow I have the entire lyrics database committed to memory.
Well, you know,
there's a band here in town called Light Rock Express, and they've evolved into Disco Expressions. There's two versions of it. Light Rock Express, which does Doobie Brothers Take It to the Street and all that stuff, and then Disco Expressions, which does all the disco music. So, yeah, the 70s are alive and well over on 3700 Main. I'll take you to one of those. You'll probably get a kick out of it.
All right,
so who's up next? My link to hold.
We've got Michael.
Michael. Michael. Trio 700W.
Ish, I'm here.
What's your question, Michael?
I guess he's gone. All right. Next
up. He is now.
713-526-5738 if you'd like to be on the air.
It's been on the screen for a while. I'm having to read past microphone posts. But it said that Al, who is a JK on the Run fan from Santa Monica, California, would like a recommendation on a tablet PC. He sees them all the time, and he sees them all the time used and would like a recommendation. He's also going to try and call back. So apparently he's not towards the end of the show. So if you want to field that.
So a fan apparently reads your blog and is tuned in tonight.
In fact, I should give a big shout out to Kevin Toefel, who's my partner on the site, because he's actually was blogging the radio show and put the webcam up. Anyway, for Al, that's a tough question, and I get asked that question a lot, because tablet PCs come in all shapes. There's slate onlys without keyboards. There's convertibles with, you know, the swivel screen like the one that I'm using here. Some of them with as big as 14-inch screens and as small as this one is an 8-inch screen, and Motion has a slate that's 8.4-inch screen. I mean, it really depends on what you use it for, you know, what your usage patterns are, exactly how you anticipate using it. Most people for a first-time tablet PC are pretty comfortable with a convertible, because that's basically just a laptop that's a superset, because it's got the swivel screen, you can ink on the screen, you can do all the cool stuff that you do with a tablet. That's what makes me like them so much. And that's usually what I recommend, is some kind of a convertible. There's no shortage of those. My favorite one right now is the Lenovo. Lenovo has the X60, the T, which has been out for a while. It's a great tablet, convertible tablet PC.
When you say convertible, it means because it has the keyboard.
It turns into a laptop.
Right.
and the screen swivels around so that you can use it as a slate tablet.
Yeah, either way.
Just like I'm doing right there.
Excellent.
For the webcam.
I just wanted to clarify that for our listeners who, you know, so basically it combines the benefit of being a tablet PC with all
and
of those,
notebook.
And then a notebook when it comes right down to it. You just want to have a keyboard, put your hands on
That's
it,
right.
go
you're,
to town.
You're not giving anything up, you know,
going
from any other notebook. You just get the extra features of doing it.
And the one that you have right there, like, you know, it doesn't, you can't tell it on the webcam, but it's actually rather light.
Yeah, it's
considering that
it's small.
Considering it's got a battery in it, it got the long life battery in there. That thing probably weighs less than 4 pounds.
This thing weighs a little over 2 pounds.
A little over two, so less than four.
It's pretty
less than three.
Probably about 2.5 with the extended
battery.
It's
quite. It's very lightweight device.
It's,
so
it's nice and small.
What's the price point on that particular one?
This is the Fujitsu P1610. I think they start at about $2,000, you know, depending on what you get on them. Like any other notebook, you can
you can trick them out.
Is there a price point below that you still get a good functional tablet PC?
Oh yeah, there's some really good convertible tablet PC starting at $1,400-$1,500.
Okay.
With, you know, Core 2 Duos, and yeah, they've got everything at the regular.
I hope that helps you out, Al. And then Michael has recalled in, so we'll go on to line two and talk to Michael. You're on the air.
Okay, I'm here this time.
Okay.
My call dropped last time. Sorry about that.
No, we're sorry if we made you hold too long. That's our fault, obviously.
That's right.
Yeah.
yeah, okay. I have a Verizon Trio 700W, and I also have an Epson AccuLaser all-in-one printer. And my question is there a way to connect the phone to the printer's phone line and actually fax using my cellular service?
No.
I don't think so.
Okay.
Faxing out's tough. The Trio, I'm not even sure it can be a fax modem. And that's very distinctive from a data modem. They don't mix the two.
Okay, that's what I thought, because I looked around on the internet and
couldn't
find it.
Can you do web stuff with the Trio?
Yeah.
So you could use one of the web-based fax services.
E-fax or J-fax.
And then you could actually submit your fax that way and then fax it to a landline.
Yeah. Right.
But, I mean, that kind of is not as cool as if you could somehow, you know, use the cellular service to do that. What do you got, Barrett?
No, that's what I was going to say.
Oh.
Just a fax gateway.
I didn't mean to steal your
Okay,
phone.
And that's what I do now. It just would have been easier, you know, ideally if I could have just, you know, directly connected it and, you know, dialing.
It'd be really easy and cool if you could just visualize it and have it come out on a fax machine or a printer.
Yeah, that'd be even
better.
That's
the technology I'm waiting for. Dwight's pushing his fingers into his temples now. I don't want to see what's going to come out of his
scanners.
I don't want to see what's going to his fax machine.
Who still uses faxes anyway?
I'm sorry?
Who still uses faxes? Do you get people faxing you stuff a lot?
But I get requests to fax stuff. Like, I'm selling my house right now, and and so, you know, they say, well, can you just fax it over? And I say, no, well, what I can do is scan it and email it to you.
Yeah, that's what I do.
A lot of attorneys are still on faxes, and a lot of legal stuff is still done by fax, unfortunately.
It's not a virtual signature. I mean, I've actually signed documentation to where it says, like, if you type your initials here, this is considered a signature, but...
Mm-hmm.
And,
they have yet to really be tested in court or anything big, so, yeah, it's sketchy.
Okay, well, that answers my question.
Well, thanks for recalling, Michael.
Appreciate it. I'm sorry?
I said thanks for recalling us.
Oh, no problem. Thank you.
All right. Next up, by length of hold,
is going to be William.
William, you're on the air.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening.
My question is PC related. I know that's a little off key tonight.
It's all right.
But on my taskbar, I have a compact computer. I'm going to give you the model right now.
That's okay.
It's relatively new, a year or less old. And on my taskbar, I'm getting messages, your computer is infected, spyware is invading your computer.
Yeah, you are infected, and the infection is telling you you're infected to try to get you to go download more infections.
Well,
it's nasty. It's a nasty. There's this anti-spyware software out there that gets on your system and it starts popping up system messages on your taskbar to tell you that your system is at risk and you should go click this link and go and install this program and check your system out.
Exactly.
So,
like you had experience with that.
Oh yeah, something that comes up here a lot, spyware. But there are different ones out there, and there are different tools used to remove them. So you have to identify what it's trying to direct you to, and that will give you a better idea of how to get rid of it. Because some of them require a manual removal. Some of them, there are tools available to remove them. Do you know the website it's trying to send you to, or the name of the tool it's trying to direct you to install?
Virus Busters is one of them, and as of last night, I'm getting a new one, and when I click on it, I really don't get anything, but the warning is there.
Okay, if you do a Google search on Remove Virus Buster,
okay.
There is a, never go with any, try, a lot of these websites try to get you to download their software, so try to avoid that. Like the first one I found wants you to get Spy Hunter. There's another program they want you to install. But if you keep digging around, sometimes you'll find like Bleeping Computer or some of these tech forums where they talk about how to remove it. But you've got this on there, and as we've mentioned, you know, we mentioned on the show a lot. Once they get on there, sometimes it can be very difficult to remove and get rid of. The first thing I would do is I would go to my website, go to geekradio.com/spyware.
Okay.
And I have some tools there, some free tools that will scan your system and removes a lot of the spyware that is out there. One of the best ones is LavaSoft's AdAware, and the other one is SpyBot Search and Destroy. These are free tools, and I have links to where you can go download them, and you can run these and scan your system and see about getting some of that stuff cleaned up.
Okay. Now, I did purchase at a hefty price of like $60 the Trend Micro PC-5.
Okay.
And it's not assisting me in removing anything. It's just letting me know it's there. Does that sound right?
Give you the ability to remove it. It should do more than just tell you it's there. It should either tell you that it has quarantined it, it has deleted it, or that it can't do it. And then, you know, that leads you to another solution. Go to my website. Check out the tools that I've got listed there. It won't hurt you to download those and run them. And there's another free antivirus software you might want to look at called AVG, we mentioned earlier, from free.grisoff.com. If you've got to email me, if you would like to, just go to geekradio.com and use the contact us form or ask us a question form.
Okay.
I'd be happy to work with you on this problem via email and try to point you in the right direction on some things.
Oh, thank you so much.
All right.
All right,
William, good luck. Thanks.
Thank you.
All right, bye-bye. All right, got about 6 minutes left in the show. Got a couple of people in the queue. We'll see what we can do to get to those before we run out of time. Who's up next?
We've got Shane.
Shane.
Hi.
Hi, you're on the air.
Thanks for taking my call. I just purchased a new MacBook about 2 weeks ago, and it's my first Apple. I've used Windows since I, you know, upgraded from DOS way back in the day, and
yes, the day.
Specifically
Saturday.
All right, so you got your first new Macintosh, huh?
Right, and you know, I have a bunch of, like, I guess hipster friends who've all, like, you know, basically brainwashed me, and I finally bought one, and I feel like my experience in Windows has equipped me a little bit to do stuff in Mac OS, but I'm trying to figure out what's the best way to, you know, initiate myself or, like, learn all the, you know, whatever, the shortcuts that I've picked up over the years in Windows.
A tattoo.
You know?
What? Jobs for life. how much were you, like, a power user on the Windows side, where you used a lot of short, you know, keyboard shortcuts, or were you, like, command prompt, or where were you in the Windows world?
I would say mainly shortcuts, you know. And I don't know, I felt like I had a pretty efficient combination of, you know, mouse usage and shortcuts. So I could do a lot. I know that I could probably do a lot more on a Windows system than I could on a Mac right now.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's understandable. I mean, if you've been using a PC for as long as you say, you know, and I have too, I'm very comfortable in that environment. You know,
right.
I know how to operate it in a way that I like. Ultimately, whatever I need to get done, I know how to do it. If I sit down in front of a Macintosh, I understand the concept. You know, we got to get past that one button thing, you know,
right,
which is infinite. Because I'm a context menu kind of guy. A right click guy, and I know there are two button mouses for the Macintosh, which you might want to get. But
they are. They all are now.
They all are.
Yeah.
Okay. Excellent. And but I'm very familiar with what keys, what buttons cause what to happen on a Windows PC. And
right,
when I sit down in front of a Macintosh and I start to use those keystrokes or look for them or look for those button clicks, doesn't make sense. You know, the start menu is not there, things like that. So it's understandable that you're going to have some hesitation. You're not going to be comfortable. You're not going to be confident moving around in that environment. Your Windows commands, you're going to kind of have to let go of them, but they'll come back to you when you get back in front of a Windows computer. Do you have any suggestions for, like, a quick tutorial or how-to on, like, dealing with contextual menus and keyboard shortcuts on a Macintosh?
Because I felt like the help menus were also kind of limited. Like, I've gone through the help menus on the OS, which, you know, do help, but... you know, I was wondering if you guys know of, like, a certain book or, like, you know,
well,
something.
There's David Pogue, who writes the Missing Manual series, has a book called Switching to the Mac, The Missing Manual. And it's it's essentially a Mac OS manual written for Windows users. So that's probably something you might want to take a look at.
Right on.
The name of it again?
It's called Switching to the Mac, The Missing Manual.
And I'm sure you could probably pick that up on Amazon or at your local bookstore. But it sounds like what you're looking for, something that basically talks to you as a Windows user and helps you kind of translate what you need to translate from those skills over to the Macintosh and become more familiar with the Macintosh mode of operation.
Could I ask you one more question?
Sure, real quick. We are desperately running out of time.
Okay.
We only got about 2 minutes left in the program. We're going to have to go. I apologize, Shane.
Go ahead. MacOSXHints.com. That's a really good site. MacOSXHints, like OS X Hints.com. And they've got a lot of new breaking stuff, and you can search for other things, too. Good site.
All right.
Thank you.
You can email me if you have additional questions. If you go to the website, use the contact us, okay?
All right. Appreciate it.
Sure,
have a good night.
You too. All right. I apologize to JR and to Katie. We're not able to get to your calls. We are out of time. You've been listening to Technology Bites here on KPFT Houston. Stick around for Border Crossings coming your way next. JK, Mr. Run, we appreciate you being here with us tonight.
It's been a lot of fun.
Hope
thanks for having me.
Have you back again. Please come to the Geek Gathering this Friday. Go to geekradio.com for details. The map, we're going to show Tron. It's going to be a blast.
Tron starts at 9
o'clock. I'll be out there about 7:30 or so. And so come out, hang out, drink some St. Arnold's. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Clifton.
I'm Barrett.
And I'm Dwight.
And we'll see you next Wednesday night for more Technology Bites.
Are you tired? The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.